Greetings, and welcome to the Virtus Investment Management Conference Call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listening-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, April 9th, 2020. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Jim Jessup. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. This is Jim Jessup, Product Manager at Virtus Investment Partners. Welcome to Virtus's Volatility and Perspective Call Series. Today we are joined by Chief Investment Officer and President of Newfleet Asset Management, Dave Albright. Dave has been managing fixed income portfolios in the multi-sector style since 1993, and his team has been the recipient of 23 Lipper Awards. Dave, welcome, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. So let's just jump into the questions. What are some of the biggest risks you and the team are seeing in the bond market right now?
Sure, Jim. You know, the market risks are economic downturn for both the U.S. and globally. You have government-imposed frozen economies, the effectiveness of fiscal and monetary policy of central banks and the Fed, and then the big unknown, the healthcare risk. When will the virus peak? Will there be a vaccine? What will happen? And then the ultimate duration of pandemic.
Great, thanks. And what is, with all of this volatility, what's really changed in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, so what's changed, obviously, is Fed and central bank policy. It's a very evolving. The Fed in the U.S. aggressively acted swiftly, robustly, and is continuing. They started by cutting rates, 50 beeps, then 100. They started QE buybacks, initially with $700 billion of AAA assets. I believe it was $500 billion of mortgages, $200 billion of treasuries. Then they added to include short investment-grade corporates, 1 to 5 year, agency mortgage backs, which they've already purchased to date, $428 billion, a buyback of municipal commercial paper, agency commercial mortgage-backed securities, and then restarted the TALF program to support the asset-backed market. Still evolving, last week they relaxed the leverage rules for banks. And then today, I would say the bazooka went to an M1 tank, obviously because of the size and what they've added. Additional economic support, which includes munis, Main Street lending, expanding both secondary corporate funding facilities of fallen angels, corporate ETFs, which are investment grade, high yield ETFs, and then TALF for CLO and CMBS AAA tranches. I would expect more Fed action, and it will do what it takes. And then the political front, obviously, which takes much longer and, you know, is much more fluid because it's politicians. The fiscal front, we've done $2 trillion care program, and right now they're looking to do approximately another additional $1 trillion. And I think from a liquidity standpoint, or not a liquidity standpoint, from what this actually does, it provides liquidity and got the markets working again. And it's very important, you know, when they start focusing, as the ECB did, on corporates, on high yield, to get those markets functioning again. And, you know, allowing them to have access to capital keeps people employed, lets them extend maturities, invest in their business, access capital, and also be able to issue debt, and that also feeds on itself. I think the one missing component, and I said that the following the ECB steps was something they should have done initially. They've done that. The non-agency segment of the market, I think, is the one missing step.
Great. As a result of the changes in the market over the last couple of weeks, how has the market reacted, kind of digested and adjusted to this new environment?
Well, you know, as they say, don't fight the Fed. Liquidity is back in the credit markets. For our portfolios, we had done the up in quality trade about 18 months ago. You know, high quality was the place to be, but when you're in a market sell-off and assets trade, you know, with a correlation of one, people sell what they can, not what they want to. So high quality was what people sold. And that, you know, actually had a negative impact initially. But then again, similar to what happened in the fourth quarter of 2018, it rebounds the quickest. And then, you know, obviously filling out positions and when the opportunity is there to look on a relative value basis, when we can actually add to additional positions.
Great. You mentioned the up in quality trade. What other changes have you made to the portfolio?
Yeah, so I would just say that, you know, first I want to go by sector, and I think it's important to, you know, see what's happened and how it's responded. I would say investment-grade corporates, you know, sort of at the trough, was down about 9.9%. Okay, today we're back. We've come back pretty dramatically. We're only down 280, and that was not including today with the news today. Issuance has taken off. We had the single largest week of issuance and also the single largest month of issuance, which is the month of March, where we had about $268 billion of issuance, $148 billion of net issuance, mostly high-quality single-A industrials. And the good news is spreads are three times as great as they were just back in January 1st. You've also seen the average dollar price of investment grade go from a 96.75 during the all-time bottom, coming back, and today we're at about a 106. So you've seen definitely a resurgence in issuance in the investment-grade corporate market. You know, companies that are choosing to go to the new issue market, so they won't have restrictions on, you know, corporate executive compensation, stock buybacks, and so forth. Typically, most deals have come at concessions, and they've tightened up out of the box. So it's been a good opportunity to play the new issue market. In high yields, we also are seeing new issues come to the market. Either in, you know, some of these deals are secured, so it provides a good opportunity to look at where you want to be in the capital stack. If you're getting secured high yield issuance, you want to be in a first lien loan. So, you know, when you have analysts that look at that, both components of the market, it really provides opportunity. But we've seen deals from Yum Brands, Carnival Cruise Lines, Tenet Healthcare, TransDigm, Restaurant Brands, LifePoint, and Wynn. At the low point, the high yield market was down 19.8%. Through yesterday, we were down 12.6%. The dollar price at the bottom was 79.125. Today, we're about 87.5. So a nice resurgence in the high yield market. Bank loans, there was virtually no issuance. We had CLO warehouses that were frozen. We got some liquidity in the market from a $6 billion loan that matured, Sprint, and now we're seeing flows that have stabilized. We saw the first deal come to market. It was Landry's Golden Nugget. You know, obviously a massive concession to the prior deals they had outstanding. LIBOR plus 1,400 at a $98 price gave you a very attractive yield. Initially, we saw bifurcation in both high yield and loans, but now we're starting to see some of the subordinated tranches, I'm sorry, some of the lower-rated tranches begin to catch up. Just to put loans in perspective, and this is how quickly the agencies are acting, S&P for the month of March had 174 downgrades with 15 upgrades. Moody's saw 124 downgrades with 11 upgrades, so about 11-to-1 ratio of downgrades to upgrades. One good piece of news on the CLO front is three static CLOs were done, where there's no reinvestment, there's no trading, and there's a final maturity date, which is a much lower risk type vehicle. And then we also saw with the one-year deals, Clue and Apollo. GSO was one of the issuers in the static space. So the loan market is coming back. We've had the average dollar price there, the low 76 and a quarter. Now, as of today, we're about 84 and a half. And, you know, spreads there are very compelling. When you look at high yield and loans, they get over 800 off. They start to look very compelling. And when we're through 1,000, they were extremely compelling, especially when much of the mispricing was due to technicals, not due to fundamentals. In the emerging markets, debt space stabilized there. We've seen issuance in the high-quality sectors. It was down about 18%. Now EM is down about 12%. High yield initially was outperforming investment grade. I'm sorry, investment grade was outperforming high yield. Now we've seen the high yield and some of the oil names catch a bid. Issuance that we've seen, Israel came with a deal. Badu came with a deal, which is single-A rated along with Israel. Indonesia, Qatar. So we're seeing opportunities in some of the investment-grade names like Russia, Ukraine, and Turkey. So we do like the EM space. However, you know, probably investment-grade corporates, high yield, and bank loans present a better opportunity. Lastly, the structured space, you know, benefited from the Fed action, the TALF. As expected, the high-quality senior cash-pay tranches are doing well. That's been a majority of our focus, the top of the capital stack, especially after living through 2008. Now, I know a lot of you know that we own subprime auto deals. We had about 10% in our short-term multi-sector. 80% of that, or slightly greater, is in single A or higher. That space performed as we would have expected. Lower in the stack, you're getting, you know, hit basically trade by appointment, which we have little or no exposure to. And then, you know, the senior tranches are starting to come back, you know, very, very nicely. We're very comfortable with the structure. And again, you have to remember, autos are still the second last bill people default on behind their cell phones. Lastly, the muni market. Now, here you continue to see prices move higher. High quality leads the chase without question. Right now, this is crazy. The market was down at the bottom. The investment grade down 7.2. Now it's down about 1%. And the high yield was down 15%. And now we're down right around 10. Right now, we're at a lower yield than we were to start the year. So that market has made an amazing comeback. You know, flows in that market, you saw massive inflows through the middle of February. Now, year-to-date, we're down $5.8 billion. We almost had $25 billion of inflows. That's completely reversed. Now we're down about $5 million. The one good thing, and when you look, as we do, as crossover buyers, typically the 10-year Treasury ended the year usually in the 70-80% range. We were at 76% of the Treasury yield. Now we're at 216% as of this morning. And then the 30-year, which is usually somewhere in the 80 to 90% range, the 30-year now is 166%. So the crossover trade does look very, very attractive.
Great. Thanks, Dave, for sharing your insights and observations with us. I'd like to open it up to our audience to see if there's any questions for Dave. Operator, could you please open the line for questions?
Certainly.
You know, before we take another question, I'd just like to, some of the changes that we've done in the portfolio, which I think are very important to, our investors. We have aggressively added to areas that we thought were, very, very attractive, and that's what we do. We're multi-sector buyers. We have plenty of liquidity in the portfolio. We did the up in quality trade coming into the year. Thought it was very important to use that liquidity if there was redemptions, but more importantly, flows have stabilized, and now it's the great time to take opportunity. In the multi-sector accounts, we've taken up high yield, taken up loans, used our structured as a liquidity. Munis, we've actually gotten to the crossover trade. Investment grade, we've participated in many of the new transactions. You know, we're up a little over, right around 2.5% in multi-short and about almost 3.5% in multi-intermediate. We've added some emerging markets. So various credit sectors that, with dollar prices that we saw that were great entry points is where we reallocated, and that's what we've done in the past. One thing I think is very important is that flows have stabilized, and we're actually seeing inflows to multi-intermediate, the bond fund, and also multi-sector short. So you have to redeploy on a dollar-cost averaging basis. It's never all in with both feet. And spread product looks very attractive on a valuation basis. You've got to be able to go through and select credits, that have property liquidity tunnels, good cash flow generation characteristics. You want to take a look at their product life cycles, which are very important. You also want to be very cognizant of cash flow, how they're positioned for the long drag in the economy, what their bank lines look like, what business they're in, how long can they go without having revenues. No business was constructed to have zero revenue. And then I would say that something is very, very important about fixed income. Just a month ago I was hearing that yields are so low, maybe it shouldn't be part of a diversified portfolio, maybe it should just be in cash. Well, now with the recent sell-off and the adjustments we've seen in the market, future returns and also spreads haven't looked better from an opportunity perspective. Valuations are better. Again, having plenty of liquidity to take advantage of the mispricings in the market is very, very important. A lot of the sell-off was not due to fundamentals. It was more technically driven. So if you focus on quality, have liquidity in your portfolio, are diversified, there's many, many buying opportunities out there. And I think one thing you have to realize is when 65% of multi-sector strategies started after 08, this is probably most similar to what we saw in 08. We've been through 1994, which was the 7 rate increases in the Mexican peso devaluation. We've been through 98, long-term capital. We saw what happened in 2002, the telecom debacle. We were there in 08, the subprime debacle. A lot of people claim they were there, but you have to make sure that you knew what type of a fund that they were when they were there. And now it's evident, people that hadn't managed through 08 being a multi-sector product. 2011, the U.S. debt downgrade. 2016, the oil shock. 2018, the Fed and ECB tightening liquidity. Now is the time you want to buy this type of a strategy. Now is the time when opportunity presents themselves to investors. And this is a great time to be dollar cost averaging.
Dave, while we wait for the first question to come in, I'll ask one follow-up. You mentioned tenure of the team as well as dollar cost averaging. In talking to you earlier in the week, it sounds like you have added some credit to the portfolio, but is it still a fair statement that you remain with a significant amount of dry powder on the sidelines to take advantage of more dislocations should they arrive?
Yeah, absolutely. Jim, our liquidity, being in liquid assets, Ben would be upset if I didn't tell you, but being in assets that have extreme liquidity, which would be cash, agency mortgage backs and treasuries, in various portfolios, we're about 8 to 11%. Now we're probably more in the 4 to 5% range. Flows are starting to come in positive, so we can redeploy those proceeds. And also, more importantly, if we see some major dislocation, we can take advantage of that with the liquidity that we currently have in the portfolio. So without question. And then we still have some high-quality structured product, which is liquid. Their liquidity has come back to most markets. As I said, the one segment where we haven't seen liquidity is in the non-agency space, where most of our focus is there's liquidity in the A1 cash pay senior tranches, just that we haven't seen that follow through with a lot of our competitors that own a lot of the lower rated tranches, especially you look at non-agency mortgage backs in the residential space, in the CMBS space, CRTs, we have no exposure to CRTs. Those have been hit very, very hard. Some of those trade by appointment only and not even on a yield basis, but on a dollar price basis.
Thanks, Dave. Operator, do we have a question at this point?
Yes, we do have a couple of questions over the phone lines. Our next question is from the line of Michael Christian. Please proceed with your question.
Good afternoon, Dave. I appreciate your comments. I just wanted to follow up on the riskier end of the spectrum, particularly high yield and bank loans. A lot of this rally over the last several days feels more technical than fundamental, and for all intents and purposes, the economy is still closed. So do you think that these prices are going to moderate at the riskier end of the spectrum over time, and things are a bit euphoric now, or what's your outlook on those areas?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to really be selective, and you're definitely right. You know, I mean, the entire market has benefited. The higher quality names have gapped up quickly. That's been our bias. Our bias has been in high yield and also in leveraged loans to be in, you know, the top of the stack, double Bs from a credit rating perspective, some 3B names. There are some dislocations, at least definitely in the loan market, which are going to be technical dislocations. When you have CLOs, when you have that magnitude of downgrades where CLOs have a triple C bucket that's full, some of these single Bs that are on watch list that maybe have good businesses and have a good liquidity tunnel may be penalized in forced sales. And that's when, you know, a guy multi-sector or an opportunistic investor can come in. So you got to, you know, you got to go through your credits. You got to look very, very hard, active management versus passive. You know, you don't want to own an index here. You want active management. To get temporary exposure, an index makes sense, but you gradually want to take that down into names that you like. And, yeah, I think there's going to be, you know, definitely a bifurcation. Those that are weaker companies that can't generate revenue, that don't have adequate liquidity, they're already feeling the pain. You know, energy, even though we've seen a recovery, energy and high, you know, triple energy and high yield is still down 40%. If you look at some of the other infected industries, which we don't have a lot of exposure to, you know, I think the only thing we had an exposure to an overweight was gaming. But if you look at any of the industries in travel, transportation, leisure, being hotels, movie theaters, cruise lines, airlines, restaurants, retail, REITs, we didn't own those. We did have, like I said, exposure to gaming, you know, and you know, but Windus came to market, so they're able to access the market. And we also just saw Landry's come to the loan market. So it depends on when this virus, you know, starts to see peak and when we get back to, you know, maybe not a normal life, but get back to work, which is going to really dictate which companies make it and which companies fail. So we're looking at it very closely. The other thing we're doing between the two is looking in the capital stack. A lot of the high-yield issuance is secured. So you have to determine if 50% of issuers in the high-yield market also have loans, do you want to be in the secured high-yield debt or do you want to be in the first lien loan? So there's a lot of work out there, and you have to be cautious. And there's some gems in the junkyards that are, you know, that are much weaker credits that will work, but it's a, you know, thing of going through and doing independent credit research.
If I could ask just one quick follow-up question, you know, for the last, let's call it 12 to 18 months, people have been talking about this massive triple B downgrade because their ratings were so aggressive to begin with. Do you think this is the catalyst for that to occur?
Yeah, I mean, without question, especially the more highly levered companies, and we had done a lot of work on the triple B space, and, you know, last year's it was one of our biggest overweights, and we stuck with consumer non-cyclicals, those food and beverage, and we did pharma and healthcare, you know, and now we're watching it like a hawk. We didn't have a lot of conviction with the auto companies, so we didn't own Ford and GM. Now we're taking a look at those two because, you know, will they be able to access this new primary lending facility? And will that help boost, you know, a Ford, a Boeing, a General Motors? Some of the other, you know, qualified companies, maybe a Ford and a Delta. I know Michael Kors, you know, would be one. Macy's would be one, Service Corp, Dillard. So we're watching that very, very closely. Those that will have access to that primary lending facility, which I believe they can borrow up to 130% of their debt outstanding. And the Fed will, I think, provide about $500 billion to that area. So we're watching it, especially the short bonds, 1 to 5 year. We're watching that very closely. But, yeah, that definitely is an area that's going to be impacted. There's a lot of those companies that were over-levered that, you know, we just didn't make any sense to us, like an Occidental Petroleum voided. We got out, we got rid of Kraft Heinz. We didn't feel the brunt of that downgrade. But a lot of massive fallen angels. I believe Ford, Kraft Heinz, Occidental, you know, are in the top 10 now of high-yield issuers based on downgrade. So something we're cognizant of as a multi-sector guy, that's low-hanging fruit when I can find it. You know, if something gets downgraded, If I'm an insurance company, a pension fund, a sovereign wealth that has a forced seller, so that's when valuations get to the point where we want to start taking a hard look at some of the stuff that we didn't like just a month ago.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Dave.
No problem.
Our next question comes from the line of Ethan Lowen. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks for the conference call here. I guess my question is just about the risk, I guess, that is out there. I mean, just from a quick perspective, right, you look at the LQD and the HYG and the recovery that they've had is almost, complete. Does it reflect as bad as things are? I mean, what if this goes on for three months where X percent of mortgages and commercial loans are on deferment, or if oil never gets above $34 to $35 a barrel, and that leads to X amount of default for the frackers, or commercial real estate, the knee drops by 5%, leads to X percent of defaults. I mean, is there still a threat of something bad happening there, whether a financial crisis level or just something that can truly have an effect that it seems like is not being shown or priced into the markets at this point?
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent question. I mean, nobody knows the length of the duration, and then you have to determine what companies are going to make it. Zero revenue for 3 months can be very, very painful. Some companies are obviously going to have to file. The markets in both commercial and residential obviously will suffer. In 2008, you had a financial system problem that turned into an economic problem. Now we have a medical healthcare problem, which turned into an economic problem that swiftly affected the financial system. So it's different. From that perspective, what we've done is, over the last 18 months, and it was purely based on valuations, we de-risked the portfolio. We came into this crisis with the lowest we've been in below investment grade, the lowest we've been allocated to high yield and bank loans, virtually no foreign currency exposure. So I think we've done that up in quality trade. We got hit because people sold what they could sell the highest quality. Our bias is still up in quality. So if we're buying the loans or buying high yield, we're trying to stay in the higher quality names that we're confident that are going to make it, that have more than ample liquidity and financial resources. But again, you're exactly right. If this thing goes on for 6 months, that's a much different ballgame. But we do have ample liquidity, and I think the Fed showed us the bazooka. Then they showed us the M1 tank. They can have the nuclear option. They can keep on going, keep on buying. If you listen to what they said today on TV, they're only about 40% of what they have has been used. They're levering some equity. I believe that the leverage for the Treasury equity was $85 billion and levered 10 times, so they had $850 billion to do this new program. I think the Fed is not done. They will come do something in the non-agency segment to stabilize that market. But when it's talking about healthcare, it's a risk that's a big unknown. So, we're going to stay prudent. We're going to stay diversified. We're going to stay with liquidity and powder. And, those things that move, like you said, that moved a little irrational, maybe that's a good time to start taking some profit.
All right. That makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you.
There are no further phone questions at this time.
Great. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for taking the time out of their day to join us. For additional market commentary and portfolio-specific insights, please visit our website, Virtus.com. If you have any additional questions or would like further information, also feel free to call us at 800-243-4361. Dave, thanks again for your time today.
Jim, thank you. Everybody have a happy holiday weekend, and be safe and be healthy.